everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Crime and Coffee Couple. My name's Allison.
And my name's Mike.
Hi, Mike.
Hey, Al. How are you?
It's I'm good. It's Friday. We're recording this a couple of days early. TGI MFNF is what I like to say.
It's been a long week. I hope everybody's had a fantastic week. Of course, by the time you're listening to this, Sunday or later. So hopefully you're ready for the next week, right? What we call it self-care Sunday.
Yes.
Get yourself all settled up. Get all your lunches done and packed and all that good stuff.
Ready for the week.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was almost questioning if I was getting sick today. I just felt so freaking run down that I was like, oh no, I think I'm getting sick. I'm wearing pajama pants if you're watching this YouTube video. So I apologize for my appearance, but it is what it is. This is called survival.
Yeah, just being yourself. That's what it's all about, right?
Our son is coming down with something. He slept for like 14 hours last night. He went to bed at 4 p.m.
Yeah, and got up at like 5 a.m.
Like 5:30-ish. She came out.
It's good 12 hours, 12 plus, 12 and a half.
13 and a half hours.
Oh, yeah. I can't do math. So I think one thing I want to mention really quick. We mentioned, I think in our bonus episode, that our
hot water heater
went down.
Yeah, we did.
So all of our patrons and Apple subscribers, you heard about it.
And, they listened to me whining, you mean.
A lot of them were saying, hey, girl, I feel you. So please update everybody because she finally took her cold shower.
Yes.
It took a lot of moaning and groaning.
Oh, I had nightmares. And if you think I'm joking, I'm not joking.
She's not saying that as a figure of speech. She actually had nightmares.
So it happened sometime, I think Sunday night. So Monday, I was rushing out the door to go to work. And I like to wipe down the kitchen before I leave. And I do it with hot water. And I'm like, huh, doesn't seem to be getting hot. But I was in such a hurry. I'm like, whatever. And then you text me and you're like, hot water heater's out. And so I'm like, oh no, my shower. So luckily, I only have to wash my hair like twice a week. I use dry shampoo, but I do wash my body every day. So after my workout on Monday, I had to get in that shower and I was screaming in the shower.
Kind of glazed over that whole like hour leading up to it where you were like, I don't really want to go. I don't want to go. It's like, it's going to be so cold. I'm like, you just got to do it. I mean, there's a choice. Are you going to take a shower or not? The choice is yes. So you have to go.
And so. Mike had no sympathy for me whatsoever. Okay, fine. So then it's coming up to Wednesday. This is the day I'm going to wash my hair. And I'm like, oh no, I had nightmares Tuesday night. So I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go into our daughter's bathroom. She uses the pool bath. So I could open the bathroom door, get some like humid, fresh air in.
You had this like harebrained idea that it would be warmer if you let a little bit of
warm air. It would be rather than the air conditioning blowing.
Sure.
So Mike's making lunch and he hears me screaming and marches in the bathroom and shoves me under the water.
I think you kind of needed it, didn't you?
Oh, I absolutely needed it. I couldn't submerge my body under that spraying frigid water.
And I got to see you naked, so that's a plus. And definitely tried to do something, but that was nixed right away.
You came in the bathroom. I was like cowering in the corner of the shower. I was like, oh, it's so cold. Were you? And he just shoved me under that water and held me there. But I don't know if I could have done it if you hadn't done it.
Well, I'm happy to help wherever I can.
I was going to shower in the pool. I was just trying to think of anything.
Our son was like, can we fire up the hot tub so I could bathe in there? I'm like, you're not going to bathe. Like, are you people insane?
Our son is more like me.
Yeah.
Whereas you and our daughter, they were like, yeah, I'm just taking a cold shower. It's fine.
Yeah, it was uncomfortable, but we got it done. Like, it was so funny. You and him are the exact same, and me and her were the same.
Same.
Like, we're just like, yeah, it sucked, but yeah, I had to do it.
It was traumatizing.
You guys
to me.
Were like, like sitting there, like anything, like brainstorming, anything that could happen.
So the guy came today, and we have a new hot water heater.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank goodness. So that was good.
And it's Perno Pizza Friday. Yeah. I don't know if we've ever talked about this
on the
show. I was
thinking the same thing. No.
Because normally we don't record on Fridays, but we're getting into the swing of that. So we have been doing this probably since our daughter was a baby and she's 12. We make homemade pizza dough. And then every Friday we make a different type of pizza. Today we're doing prosciutto and goat cheese.
Which our son ate all the prosciutto yesterday. Yeah. So I had to go buy some more.
And put it away like a monster, like a psychopath.
Oh, we've talked about that before. On one of our Instagram reels, he put back cheese, like just ripped open, like a, you know, sliced cheese slices, Sargento cheese slices, just ripped it wide open, left it out in the refrigerator. All of it was like hard as a rock.
Hard as a rock. So last night we're getting ready for dinner. Of course, he's sleeping because he's been sleeping since 4 p.m. And you're like, is this prosciutto for our pizzas tomorrow? And I look over, I'm like, well, it was. Yeah. Thing is, I don't even think he put it back in the container.
No.
It was just open in the cheese drawer.
Absolute animal psychopath.
Animal. An animal. So every Friday we do PPF is what we call it, Perno Pizza Friday for Pernecki. And our daughter does pepperoni every Friday. I'm like, are you getting tired of that? You want different toppings? She's like, nope, I'm good. And every Friday I come up with different toppings for our pizza.
Yeah. I mean, I'm more than happy to do it every once in a while, but I mean, mine are boring, like sausage or, you know, whatever. I think I'd do like a bratwurst pizza or something. You're like, eh, I don't want bratwurst pizza.
Sometimes we'll do like a Greek inspired pizza. We'll do like the gyro meats with feta and yada, yada.
Whatever
buffalo chicken.
Yeah.
All sorts of good stuff.
Yep. So, hey, real quick, we haven't said this in a few weeks, but if you've listened to us for 3 episodes or longer and you've enjoyed what you've heard, it's time to put out. You know, just want to lay it out there. And if you can go ahead and leave us a review on whatever platform you're listening to us on, please do so. Maybe a couple of nice words. That'd be nice, too. And if you don't like what you're doing, then why are you listening to us 3 in a row? So just go on. That's not every podcast.
And we
do
appreciate it for sure.
Absolutely.
Thank you guys so much. And on that note, are you ready to get into this?
I am.
Okay, so this is a case I have had researched for quite a while now. This is a listener suggestion from Laura. This is the unsolved disappearance of, Susie Lamplew. So Susie Lamplew was a 25-year-old woman. She worked in Fulham, London as a real estate agent for Sturgis & Sons on 654 Fulham Road in London. And she suddenly vanished during business hours while she was working in broad daylight.
Wow, you don't hear that often.
No. So Susie grew up in South London with her 3 siblings, and her father, Paul, recalls, you know, her as just this outgoing young woman, and she truly knew how to live fully. She worked as a hairstylist on the QE2 cruise liner, and then she ultimately moved on to become an estate agent. And I knew somebody who did hair on a cruise line.
I was just thinking that. She got to see all these different countries and stuff.
She basically traveled the entire world.
For free and made money.
Yeah.
So.
It's an interesting thing to do if you're young and you don't have a family. It's kind of like
intercourse with plenty of different people.
Could or could not do that. It doesn't go with the job description.
I would. No, you don't have to, but you probably do because, I mean, what else is there to do?
It's kind of like somebody who works as like a traveling nurse. Yeah. I would do that if I was young and single. You get paid a crap ton and you get to experience different parts of the country.
Absolutely.
So clearly she was open to different ideas because it's not an easy gig to live on a cruise ship amongst tight quarters and such. So it was Monday, July 28th, 1986, and Susie left her office at around 12:40 p.m. She had an appointment for a house showing. So after 2 hours, her manager became concerned because he realized that Susie hadn't come back to the office and that she had, on top of that, had missed another appointment. And this just wasn't who she was. So he was concerned. He initially thought maybe there was some sort of family emergency. Of course, it's 1986. There's not cell phones, and that she perhaps got tied up and hadn't had the time to phone the office to update them as to what was going on. So as time continued to go on, he called Susie's mom, Diana, and she hadn't heard from her daughter either. She indicated no, there had been no family emergency that she was aware of. So, of course, the concern is only growing at this point. So they turned to Susie's work diary to see maybe she had written something in there that would give an idea as to what was going on. And she had written 1245 Mr. Kipper, 37 Sherald's/S. So Sherald's, and I hope I'm saying that street name right, is the, so 37 Sherald's is the appointment that she had left for at that time. And of course, she's writing that she's meeting a Mr. Kipper. The O/S stood for outside the property. So that's where they were going to meet. The house in question had been on the market for about a week. Susie had left her purse at the office. She did take her key ring, and this held the keys to both her car and her house, as well as a smaller wallet that held several credit cards and $15. So when there was still no word from Susie, she was reported missing at around 6:45 p.m. by her supervisor. During the investigation, police learned that Susie had been seen by 3 witnesses outside the property where she was set to go at 12:45-ish. So they saw her, a man that was walking home past the property. He saw her at 12:50 p.m. It appeared as if she was standing there waiting for somebody. She was by herself. Then 10 minutes later, at around 1 p.m., the owner of the house next door heard someone leaving number 37 and saw Susie and a man leaving the house and looking back up at it. It's kind of, I looked it up online, it's like a row of townhomes. So when I say the man next door, it's connected to the property. Very, very close, close to the street. We're not talking like a single family home where there's room in between the street and the houses around it.
He clearly saw them.
He saw them. So they're looking back up at the house, and the sighting resulted in an artist sketch of the unidentified male that was seen with Susie. Another man corroborated the sighting when he was walking by at the same time. The assumed Mr. Kipper was described as being very well dressed. He was carrying a bottle of champagne that had ribbons tied around it. And obviously this was considered to be a little strange for a house viewing. Yeah. It's not like he was purchasing the house.
Or just purchased it.
And yeah.
Congratulations.
Here's your keys.
Yeah, usually a realtor gives you like a gift or something, but this guy's got some champagne with him.
He's carrying champagne to just see a house. So the neighbor reported that it appeared that the two were engaged in a heated conversation before they then got into Susie's company-issued white Ford Fiesta. The man was described as a white male between about 25 and 30 years old. He had a darker complexion, dark hair that was swept back. He was wearing a charcoal suit. He may have had a broken nose. Maybe it was a little crooked or something like that. Another man saw a couple arguing between 2 and 2:30 in that same area. They then saw Susie driving her car from Shorelds Road in an erratic fashion. This actually was so erratic that this witness kind of had to swerve to avoid having a collision.
Wow.
So Susie's close friend, this is Barbara Whitfield, she saw Susie driving north up Fulham Palace Road in her car with a man at about 2:45 p.m. She was firm on the fact that it was Susie. She waved at her friend as she biked down the road. Susie was talking to this man that was sitting in the car with her, so she did not see her. Barbara was the only witness that personally knew Susie, so her statement was given significant weight because it wasn't like, oh, I don't know Susie, but I think it was her. This is someone that knew. This is my friend, and I saw her.
Right.
So by 3:30 p.m., Susie's coworkers began to grow concerned when she still hadn't returned to the office. At 4:30 p.m., they drove over to the property in question, 37 Shorelds Road, to see if she was there. She was not. Susie's car was found approximately a mile and a half away from the property at 10 p.m. that evening. This was on Stevenage Road near another house that was for sale. The car was described as poorly parked. It was partially overlapping a garage outside of 123 Stevenage Road. So clearly whoever parked it did so in a hurry. And we do know that Susie was seen driving erratically. So this is kind of consistent with that. So this car had been seen by several witnesses at this very spot at various points of the afternoon. The car showed no signs of a struggle. There were no fingerprints accounted for other than Susie's. The driver's door was unlocked, the handbrake was off, and Susie's small wallet that she had taken with her was found in the glove compartment. The keys to the car, as well as the property at 37 Shorelds Road, were nowhere to be found. The driver's side seat was pushed far back. It was to the point that somebody of Susie's size and height would not have been able to reach the pedal. It's kind of like whenever I get in the car after you drive it, I could barely even push the brake to start the car.
Yeah, so she wasn't driving.
No, it was clear that she wouldn't have been driving it at that point. So sometime later, a witness came forward with significant information that was dismissed at the time because this witness said that a blonde-haired woman said did such and such. Now, the police were incorrectly under the assumption that Susie had brown hair when she vanished.
Oh, no.
And there's a reason for this, because she had just made a change in her appearance and in her hair.
Okay.
And thinking, too, what was she doing on that cruise liner? She was a hairstylist. Oftentimes, hairstylists change their look a lot.
Sure.
So they're thinking that this is incorrect, because a photo of Susie with dark brown hair was released. But on the Friday just before she vanished, and keep in mind she vanished on a Monday, she had changed her hair and dyed it blonde. So she was brown haired at this point in time when she's being when she vanished, she had blonde hair.
Well, that's interesting because I've never met her, you know, so it's just like going off of pictures.
Right.
It's like, okay, you don't think, okay, did she have different hair?
Right. You're seeing what you see and assuming that's how she looks.
Yeah.
So he said he was jogging when he saw a car speeding down Stevenage Road. He saw a dark left-hand drive BMW suddenly stop farther down the road, and a woman matching Susie's description was seen struggling with a man inside the car and sounded the horn in what appeared that maybe she was trying to draw attention. He said that the woman either appeared to be laughing or screaming. He truly couldn't tell. He was puzzled by how she was able to drive with such chaos in the car, but it hadn't occurred to him at that moment that it was a left-hand drive car and that she had actually been the passenger, not the driver. So, you know, again, this is a dark BMW. So Susie's boyfriend, this is 27-year-old stockbroker. He's a 27-year-old stockbroker, as well as her male flatmate. They were both questioned because, of course, they're saying she's seen with this man. Is it potentially these two guys? They were not. They had solid alibis. They were quickly cleared from the case.
Good.
Her two-bedroom flat in Putney was searched. There was no suspicious findings whatsoever. Susie's office manager informed police that Susie had received a bunch of red roses. They had been delivered to the office by a mystery man only days before she disappeared. And it didn't sound like this was clearly from her boyfriend because it was a mystery person.
Well, you got this guy bringing champagne to the meeting. It's a couple things adding up.
So 6 months later, a man informed police that they discovered an abandoned BMW that was registered to a Belgian man who sometimes went by Mr. Kipper. But the owner was located in Belgium, and at the time of Susie's disappearance, the car was actually stored in Belgium at that time. So the owner had an alibi. He was quickly eliminated as a suspect. When Diana, this is Susie's mom, learned that her daughter was missing, she said that her initial reaction was just pure frozen shock that gave way to a flood of adrenaline that shot her into overdrive. She and her husband went down to the river where Susie's car had been found abandoned, and they began to call out for their daughter. They brought their dogs with. They encouraged their dogs to search for Susie. She recognized that they were likely disturbing the neighborhood, and police also made it clear that they were getting in their way. But these are desperate parents looking for their daughter that just suddenly vanished during a typical workday.
And nobody's going to look harder than her parents.
Right, because nobody cares like her parents will care.
Yeah.
So 2 days after Susie went missing, it was Diana's 50th birthday. This is Wednesday, July 30th. The Lamplugh's home in Southwest London was filled with journalists, but Diana was welcoming the media because it's obviously they're getting the word of their daughter's disappearance out, and the more ears and eyes on the streets, because we're talking London. We're not talking some remote little village. This is a city that this happened. I mean, in broad daylight. And obviously people are coming forward and saying, I did see this, that, or the other.
Right.
So she's happy that this the word is being spread about her daughter's case, that's thus bringing attention to it. So the following day, Diana and her husband, Paul, were interviewed on two different networks, and Diana spoke of her fears. She said, I feel she is shut up somewhere, that she is being held against her will. I feel that because she hasn't contacted us. She is a very strong, very fit lady, so she should be able to cope with most situations. So her mom obviously knows that she's a very strong-willed person, but I can only imagine the terror that must have been going through their minds in terms of what sort of scenario had brought them to where they were at that time.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of bad things enter your head.
I mean, you're just desperate. So in the meantime, Diana had received sacks of letters from well-wishers, people that said, you know, we're thinking of you, we're hoping that this all turns out, you know, in a positive way. A week after Susie disappeared, Diana spoke with BBC TV's London Plus. She said that she was beginning to realize that her daughter might be dead. The fact that time has passed, her daughter hasn't been in contact with her, she was beginning to lose hope. She said that she could face up to that, but not what happened in between. Paul, this is Susie's dad, explained that Susie was easily claustrophobic. At one point in time, she panicked in a cable car, and they knew that if she was being held somewhere in tight quarters, if she was being held prisoner, shut in somewhere, that she would be just desperately terrified. And the idea of their daughter being scared and, you know, somewhere where she knew something bad was going to happen, they couldn't even bear the thought of that. They found it easier to accept that she was dead rather than the idea that she's just out there suffering.
Yeah.
Oh, just what a horribly desperate feeling to think that you would wish that your daughter would be put out of her misery because you can't even think of what could be happening otherwise.
Yeah. And as parents, you want to take any kind of pain or suffering away from your kids if you can. So mm-hmm. I definitely see where they're coming from.
So in April of 1989, this is almost 3 years after Susie vanished, a woman contacted authorities to report that she had reason to believe that her former boyfriend, this is John Canaan, was involved in Susie's disappearance. He had been given the nickname Kipper during his time at a nearby bail hostel where he lived at the time of Susie's disappearance. The nickname was given to him because he wore what are known as Kipper neckties. Hmm. So that's how he earned this nickname. In 1980, this is not a good guy, and I'll tell you why. In 1980, Canaan raped and beat his girlfriend when she tried to leave him. Yeah. He also raped a shopkeeper the following year in 1981.
Like convicted of these things?
Yes, he was in jail at various times.
Nice.
So police interviewed Canaan on three separate occasions. At the time of Susie's disappearance, he was living in a day release London prison. So he was coming, this is coming at the end of a sentence that he received for rape and robbery. So this meant that during the day, Canaan was a free man as long as he returned to the prison at a set time in the evening. So he would have had the ability to be out and about.
That sucks.
He was described as a very charming person by those that met him. He had access to expensive cars that he used to go to trendy wine bars in the area where Susie's office was. He gave off the illusion that he was a very rich and successful man. He did often charm people by delivering chocolates as well as roses. And keep in mind, I mentioned that a mystery man did deliver roses just days before Susie disappeared.
Yep.
So this guy was a chameleon. He could give off the impression of being wealthy, charming, successful, and then really he was a wolf in sheep's clothing.
Like
truly.
Ted Bundy type.
100%.
That's where everybody's head goes instantly.
Mm-hmm. So he was very much appealing to romantic interests from the beginning. And then you would see his horrific true colors beneath. But by that time, he's abusive and scaring you. So a lot of the times he's bullying women into staying by fear. So he had also been telling people that he hoped to buy a property in the area. So it's lining up that it could be this guy.
So how do they, I'd love to hear more about how they questioned him, but then kind of let him go.
Right. And I'll tell you all about it. So before he was convicted, Canaan worked as a successful car salesman. And when I say convicted, this is of the rape charges, not in Susie's case. So he was a successful car salesman. And in 1974, he married the future mother of his child. His first child was born in 1980. This is about the time that Canaan left his wife for a younger woman. This woman said that she had tried to leave him on multiple occasions, but each and every time he would become violent and abusive and again scare her into staying.
Oh, poor thing. That sucks, man, when you're just like stuck. You know, we always say, if you're in an abusive relationship, get out. And you're always like, well, sometimes it's too scary.
And when you're trying to get out, that's the most dangerous time in an abusive relationship.
Right.
So the two eventually did part. And from here, he moved on to numerous very short-lived relationships that were also described as abusive. In 1981, Canaan started his 8-year prison sentence in Fulham for rape. So before his arrest, Birmingham police were in the process of trying to solve a series of cases where a male suspect, went to houses that were up for sale and ended up attacking the female owners when they opened the door. So this person became known as the house for sale rapist, where 20 women ended up being attacked and sexually assaulted in area properties. This was like an epidemic.
That's super scary, man. That's crazy. Like, so you put your house for sale and it's like, well, you better be home when somebody comes. Yeah, honey, you better be home because you never know if the rapist is coming over.
And you know, you can think of the times. Like, this is an era where oftentimes the women were staying home and the men were working. So they would be the ones welcoming potential buyers into the home.
Also, if I could say real quick, house for sale rapist is a terrible name.
Well, I shook my head when I wrote, like, how creative.
Like realtor racist rapist.
Yeah.
Or something.
The house for sale rapist.
Yeah. It's like, okay, house for sale rapist. There we go. That's our tagline.
I mean, it is what it is.
Yeah.
So obviously this was a very scary time because 20 women who had their houses up for sale ended up being attacked.
Scary.
However, no one has ever been arrested for these crimes. Because of the sheer volume of tips from the public, it took the police 1 year to look into John Kanaan. Because again, his ex-girlfriend is calling and saying this very well could be the person who did something to Susie. So police discovered that sketches that had been made of the man that people saw, because obviously at least three people saw this guy out in front of the house with Susie. So they made a sketch. Well, lo and behold, he looked very similar to Kanaan. So police were also informed by Susie's family that they believe that she was being stalked before she disappeared. It was theorized that Susie had a relationship potentially with Kanaan and was planning on leaving him. This may have led him to adopt the alias Mr. Kipper as a way to lure her away. Kanaan's rape sentence had been reduced and he was released from prison on July 25th, 1986, which was only 3 days before Susie disappeared. In 1987, this is 1 year later, Kanaan submitted a video profile for some dating agency. A potential suitor reviewed the video. She thought he was funny and attractive, but he did at the same time come off as overconfident and potentially aggressive. So he, you know, a lot of the times people are drawn to men who have that pizzazz and that confidence.
Yeah, you want to be taken care of, you know, as a woman, or and a man wants to be taken care of by a woman too. So it's like, you know, you see somebody who's funny, it's like you picture yourself with them, and these narcissists are fantastic at getting people to like them for a short period of time.
Mm-hmm, because then, their confidence is through the roof.
Yeah, and then the real them shows up and you're a piece of garbage.
And then lo and behold, within days of his dating profile being approved, a woman named Shirley Banks was reported missing. Now, Shirley wouldn't have been on the lookout for a date. She was a newlywed, but this is all just timing purposes, I'm saying. So 3 weeks later, Kanaan was arrested again, this time 80 miles from where he lived, for robbing and raping two women in a clothing store.
I mean, at this point, I think if you're like guilty of rape twice, then that should be the same thing as like murder, basically.
It's a freaking epidemic.
Yeah. This person's not going to stop ever unless they get castrated or whatever. Like, I'm all for physical castration. Like, just kill his little balls and just take out all the testosterone out of him. And just like, clearly he can't be trusted.
Well, and you just know that it's only going to be at the sake of the next victim that right. He gets put behind bars.
Guaranteed.
So at the time, he was carrying a briefcase. So this is when he was being arrested 80 miles from where he lived for robbing and raping two women in a clothing store. So as they're apprehending him, he's carrying this briefcase. And police obviously seized it. Inside this briefcase, they found a scrap of paper that turned out to be part of a tax disc from Shirley Banks' car. And in case you're wondering, because I didn't know what a tax disc was. It's a small round sticker that is placed in the window of a vehicle that shows that the taxes have been paid for it. Oh. So Shirley was a newly married 29-year-old textile factory manager from Clifton. When she was out shopping on October 8th, 1987, she was abducted sometime after 7:40 p.m. So she and her husband had made plans. They were going to meet up for some drinks that night. She didn't show up. So he's thinking, okay, maybe she went to the wrong bar. So he's popping in and out of various pubs like, okay, maybe she's in here. No, she was nowhere to be seen. So he calls her work the next day and they're like, you know what? You just missed her. She just called 15 minutes ago. She told us she couldn't come into work because she had an upset stomach.
Oh my God.
I know. Crazy, yeah. Right? So 6 months after she disappeared, tragically, Shirley's body was found in a wooded area in Somerset, which was eerily known as Dead Woman's Ditch. Wow. That's where they found her body.
Before they even found her. That was what it was known by.
Yes. Wow. It was known as Dead Woman's Ditch. So her skull, this is so sad, had been violently crushed with a rock. She had been sexually assaulted, and ultimately it came back to be pinned on Kanaan.
So obviously we're thinking that he forced her to call in. Yes. And everything. And
100%.
Torture her basically until he was done with her?
Yes. So after Kanaan had abducted her, he would have held her in his apartment for 18 hours. And during that time, he forced her to call her workplace and tell them that she was sick to her stomach and that she would be unable to come in. So imagine her poor husband calls in and it was her. They heard her on the phone.
Yeah.
How sad is that? That she was out there. She was alive.
And all she wants to do at this time is talk to her husband and say, come save me.
Of course. And she's probably just hoping, if I go along with what this person is telling me to do, maybe they'll let me live.
Right.
And clearly they hadn't.
Jeez, what a sicko.
He's a monster. So in the meantime, he held onto her car because they could not find it. Well, they ultimately found it in a series of a garage amongst the flats where he was living in. He had tried to change it. It was an orange car. He had it painted blue. The other thing was he switched out the license plate. So now this license plate is SLP 3886. So there's this criminologist that I listened to. This is David Wilson, and he believed that this specific plate was not a coincidence and actually had meaning behind it. So the SLP could have been Susie Lamplow, and that the 386 could be symbolic of three murders in the year of 1986. And the reason why he thinks that is because Kanan is someone who truly likes to play games with people.
Well, he thinks he's better. He thinks he's smarter. He thinks he's going to get away with everything.
And, you know, a catch me if you can kind of way.
Right.
The fact that Shirley's body was found in a location that was known as Dead Woman's Ditch is not by accident.
Yeah, he purposely...
For sure. So Susie had visited a pub on July 25th, 1986. This would have been a few days before she disappeared. This is the same day Kanan was released from prison. So while she was out at this pub, the contents of her purse went missing. They were found by the landlord after Susie left. So the landlord called Susie and they arranged for her to pick these items up on Monday at 6 p.m. This is the day she disappeared. So, of course, she didn't come by at 6 p.m. to get them. So several hours after Susie vanished, someone called the pub and spoke to the landlord. They identified themselves as a woman named Sarah and said that she had a message for Susie and she left her phone number. Then a man called the pub and said that he was a policeman. He asked if they had Susie's diary and checkbook. Police later confirmed that no one from the police force had made that phone call, and they could not find the woman who claimed to be Sarah. So the landlord said that he gave the paper that he had written Sarah's phone number on to police, but this paper ended up getting lost. The first call came through before Susie's disappearance had been known or released. So what they thought was that maybe Susie had been told to make this phone call while she was being held captive somewhere, because clearly we know this is what he does. This is what he did to Shirley. And that maybe the man that called and said that he was a policeman may have been Kanan.
Sure.
So it's possible that there had been a person who had the person who had taken the contents of her purse at that pub, because again, he was released at that time. So in 1989, Kanan was sentenced to life in prison for the murder of Shirley Banks and would be eligible for parole in 2023. Obviously, I'm telling you this story in 2024. He has yet to be released. So his first parole hearing was in September of 2023. It was determined that he would remain in prison because he is a risk. And this was 100%. And this decision was made, obviously, for the safety of the public.
Yeah.
So in 1999, an internal report by the Metropolitan Police criticized the handling of the original investigation for Susie's case and the failure to further investigate John Kanan. In the early 2000s, a new investigation was started with the goal of answering the question, was John Kanan Susie's murderer? So investigators learned that several estate agencies in Fulham had been visited by a man referring to himself as Mr. Kipper. Detectives believe that this was Kanan, who was on the search for potential victims to abduct and murder. And they also believe that he absolutely fit the description of the house for sale rapist. Because again, 20 women ended up being attacked. They all saw their attacker. He came into their house. He fit the description.
That's crazy, man. This guy's got to be put away. Forever.
So these attacks stopped in the early 1980s.
When he was in jail?
Well, it's actually when he began a new relationship with a woman named Sharon Major. So it was all right at that time. Only days before Susie's disappear, John Canaan appeared uninvited at a house that was for sale in Sherrold's Road. This is the road where Susie met this Mr. Kipper. Mm-hmm. It was his belief that this female occupant was home alone, and he began acting very strangely. And then thankfully, this woman's husband happened to be home. He came out, and this guy quickly left.
Wow.
So we're talking, this guy is literally being released from prison days before, and he's already showing up at homes to do it again.
Yeah, get his next fix.
And this is what you just said. Somebody like this is not going to stop. The only thing that is going to stop him is if he stays in prison.
And again, I'll volunteer to be that person that makes these decisions. I think I'll be 99.9% accurate.
It's just unbelievable. So new reconstructions were created and shown on Crime Watch in 2000, this time showing a correct image of Susie with blonde hair of what she would have looked like at the time she disappeared, and this resulted in new witnesses coming forward. A man told police that he had seen a man that fit the description of Canaan looking into the window of Susie's estate agency on the very day that she disappeared. So Susie's desk was strategically placed where it was, right by the window, because she was a very attractive young woman, and the estate agency felt that positioning an attractive person by the window would thus attract customers.
Yeah, it absolutely works,
which,
trust me.
I don't like. I don't like using women as like pieces of meat. It's not cool to me. We're a lot more than a pretty face.
Absolutely. No, I agree, but it does work.
Like, we were watching cruise videos because we're taking a cruise this summer, and this one video was just made for this woman's nipples.
Yeah, and they were fantastic nipples.
She's standing in a white, like, bathing suit type top. Her nipples, you know she was squeezing or icing them right before the video rolled.
Oh, freshly iced. I mean, it's like those, I guarantee ice cubes were within 3 feet of her, the ones she just used. And she's just like, welcome to my room. Arms wide open and just like, bing, full beam, high beams, straight on.
I'm like, whoa. I don't appreciate that. So Susie was positioned at this spot in the office to attract customers, and somebody saw someone that fit his exact description looking in the window on the day she disappeared. Police also released Canaan's 1987 dating video, which caused more witnesses to come forward and confirm that he was the person they had seen in Fulham that day. I have zero doubt that he is the person they had seen.
Yeah.
But it's kind of crazy that it took the year 2000 to release an accurate photo of what Susie looked like on the day that she disappeared.
Right.
Kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Because I've had every color hair under the sun, too.
Yeah, but so obviously somebody took a picture of her somewhere, right?
They had to have.
Or maybe
before.
Artist rendering or something.
When she had blonde hair, maybe a picture was taken of her before. Or like you said, maybe they changed it.
Yeah.
So police also found that Susie had recently told family that she was dating a new man that lived in the Bristol area, which was where Canaan had moved only days after she disappeared and where he had family. She had also told her family that she was feeling fearful of this man. And I did mention that she had a 27-year-old boyfriend. It sounds like maybe they weren't that serious. Maybe she was seeing other people.
On again, off again.
Yeah, perhaps. So Canaan denied ever being in Fulham, but police were able to disprove this. He worked as a porter in the area while on day release from the prison. He's a liar. Anything that comes out of his mouth, you cannot believe.
Right. I mean, you may as well not even have him speak because you can't trust anything.
Why ask him questions?
Yeah.
Police also found that Canaan drove a dark left-hand drive BMW, which is the same type of car that a witness had claimed to see Susie struggling in. Remember, he said she hit the horn and maybe she was laughing, maybe she was screaming. He couldn't tell. Mm-hmm. So Canaan also did not have an alibi for the day in question and claimed to just simply not remember what he was doing, despite the fact that he had an impeccable memory for other details at that very time.
Interesting.
Yeah.
How convenient.
How convenient. So he was arrested in 2000 in relation to Susie's case. He was not charged. Over the 5 days that he was interviewed, he told detectives that there were only one or two things that he had yet to be caught for. He was arrested again in 2001. He was questioned, but there was still insufficient evidence to charge him with Susie's case.
Yeah, because it's just people that think they saw him.
Yes. And I will tell you, by this point in time in the year 2000, they had declared her deceased,
yeah,
her family. So in 2007, a criminologist who had corresponded with Canaan revealed that during the police investigation between the years 2000 and 2002, discovered DNA evidence in a car that had been previously owned by Canaan that proved that Susie had been inside the car. The criminologist said that Canaan indicated that he had access to a red Ford Sierra at the time that Susie disappeared. Detectives found the car in a North London scrapyard, and DNA evidence showed that both Canaan and Susie's DNA were inside this car.
Yeah, but they were like dating, so.
Right? Well, potentially. Her parents never met him. Like, no. Oh, yeah. This is all being theorized. Yeah. There was no proof that they were actually dating. Mm-hmm. The Crown Prosecution Service felt that it could not be proven, though, that they had been inside the car at the same time. Maybe she had been in at one point and he had been at the other. So they did not think that this was enough evidence to bring charges against Canaan.
Yeah, they got to find a murder weapon or her body or something.
But they haven't.
Right.
So Canaan previously indicated that he drove the car frequently. He later changed his story and denied then ever using the car.
Again, who cares what he says?
Exactly. He's a liar. So the man who'd lent him the car reported that Canaan had access to the car. He very well could have used it on the day that Susie vanished. There was no proof that he did. He could have, though. So in 2001, a former girlfriend of Canaan came forward to police to tell them about a strange conversation that she had had with him while they were driving around one day. She said that he brought up Susie's disappearance out of the blue and abruptly pulled the car over. He gestured toward the Norton Barracks, which was a former military base, and indicated that this was where Susie's body was buried.
Whoa.
So the army left the site in 1979. Houses now stood at that location, which really made it impossible for police to dig because houses are standing on that area.
Yeah, there was nothing there before.
So the area was searched as well as they could. They did not find her body.
It's probably under a house.
Right. So in 2002, then a fellow inmate notified authorities that Susie's body was buried under the patio of Canaan's mother's home in Sutton Coldfield. In 2018, this would have been 32 years after Susie went missing, an excavation crew was utilized at the former home of Sheila Canaan. This is John's mom. But again, when I say John Canaan, again, there was no finding of Susie's body. She had sold the house to another family in 1992. The house had been investigated in 2003, but the garden had never been dug up at that time. When they did dig it up, they did not find Susie's remains.
Oh, she's where he said that she is.
Very, very well could be.
Yeah.
Weeks after the parole board determined that Canaan was too dangerous for release, this would have been in September of 2023, he wrote a letter to the Mirror, this is a magazine, insisting that he did not murder Susie Lampla.
Hmm.
It's like, I don't care what you say because everything it means nothing.
It's garbage.
So he started the letter with, I was not involved in the disappearance of London estate agent Susie Lampla. I have an alibi. And of course, I said before, he did not have an alibi. He said he couldn't remember what he was doing that day.
Yeah.
So now, so all of a sudden, he's claiming that on that day, July 28th, 1986, on the day that Susie disappeared, he was treating his mother to a spot of lunch in Birmingham.
Mm.
He insists that he had told officers about this alibi during a series of recorded interviews in 2000 in Hammersmith Police Station. But police say, no, he did not. It is his belief that the police are just trying to divert attention away from themselves and onto him.
Oh, you're a scumbag.
Yes, like, it's a horrible human being.
Yeah, like none of this makes any sense at all.
And mind you, he's never owned up to any of the crimes that he's been convicted of.
Oh, wow.
So Canaan has denied any involvement in Susie's disappearance, but many believe that he was waiting on his mother's death to confess because he wanted to avoid further damage to her already fragile health. His mother, Sheila, had suffered from dementia. It's unclear if she's even still alive at this point. Because there hasn't been enough evidence, Canaan has never been convicted for Susie's disappearance, despite being the only known suspect. A March 2023 article indicated that Kanaan was receiving end-of-life palliative care. He has been in poor health for several years after suffering a stroke.
Oh, good.
That resulted in partial paralysis that required him to be in a wheelchair.
Hey, whatever God or whatever you believe in, good job.
But the point is, they said this as of March, but then in September or so, he wrote that letter. Yeah. So he's well enough to write a letter to a magazine. So in 2008, Susie's father, Paul, suggested a different person. This is Steve Wright as a potential suspect. He was convicted of murdering 5 women in and around Suffolk. So obviously not a good person.
Yeah.
In 2006 is when he was convicted. He was serving a life sentence when authorities noted the similarities in the crimes that he was convicted for, as well as Susie's disappearance. Wright had worked with Susie while she was working as a stylist on the ocean liner Queen Elizabeth II in 1982, while Wright was working as a steward at the same time. So he maintained contact with her up until the time of her disappearance. He also, lo and behold, used the nickname Kipper.
Wow. They didn't look into this guy further?
No.
Oh my God.
Wright's ex-wife, Diana Cole, spoke with authorities and alerted them to the fact that Wright was in the area at the time that Susie disappeared.
Huh.
So potentially he could be. He's in prison for life of 2006. Within weeks of her disappearance, Susie's parents started the Susie Lampla Trust, which has the mission of reducing the risk of abuse, aggression, and violence with a specific focus on stalking and harassment through education, campaigning, and support. And that is fantastic because women who are stalked and harassed are very vulnerable and helpless because they'll try to get help and be told, we can't do anything because they haven't truly done anything.
Yeah, not breaking any laws.
Yeah, so it's like, okay, so you're basically waiting for me to die before you can do something.
You need to get stabbed or something. Sorry, come back when something happens.
So truly, it's their goal to create a society where people feel safer and are safer. It exists so that what happened to Susie doesn't happen to anyone else. Susie's body has never been found. She was declared legally dead in 1993. Some sources say 1994. According to criminologist David Wilson, a witness did see someone who looked exactly like Kanaan with a suitcase. This man was struggling to carry the suitcase. He disposed of it in the Grand Union Canal below a bridge called Gallows Hill. So very suspicious.
Hmm.
You're struggling with a suitcase. You're throwing it in a canal. You look just like this guy.
Yeah.
This witness was never interviewed by detectives.
Gallows Hill. You know, the gallows, you think of hangings or whatever. Or, you know, heads.
Right.
Whatever. So, I don't know.
So, this person was never interviewed that saw this.
Hmm.
There was a falling out between police and the Lampla family because Diana especially felt that various lines of inquiries were never looked into. They felt like police weren't doing their due diligence to find their daughter's killer.
Well, yeah. And this other guy, Stephen Wright, that they didn't even question, or Steve Wright. Sorry, I was thinking the comedian, but that seems some bad police work possibly.
Right. So as we stand right now, it's only John Kanaan that is considered a suspect.
But still, they have nothing. So,
you know, obviously we're being told that he's in very poor health, receiving palliative end-of-life treatment. So some speculate, will he provide a deathbed confession? And I watched this criminologist, David Wilson, in an interview. He feels not a chance in hell. He said, somebody who is a psychopath is lacking a conscience and wouldn't be the type of person to feel the need to unburden themselves or give her family closure.
I wonder if, I'd love to ask this guy, the expert, if you really worked on his ego and kind of patted it a little bit and be like, oh man, when you left that girl in, you know, the dead woman's pit or whatever that place was called, that was really interesting. That was kind of smart of you to do that. You know, kind of so
gave him some kudos or whatever.
Like stroke his ego a little bit and then see if you can almost fool him into saying something else, oh yeah, the other one I did.
Right.
You can almost be like, I'll bet you wherever the other ones are, that was pretty good too. He's like, I must say, shut off the video, pretend the video's off.
Right.
I kind of laughed at that. Or, it's not funny at all.
Of course not.
Of course.
This is just getting him to confess.
Right.
So, you know, according to David Wilson, he's never going to confess, not in his dying breath. I guess only time will tell.
Yeah.
He really has never admitted to any of the crimes that he has committed. Sadly, Susie's mom, Diana, passed away in 2011 at age 75 after she suffered a stroke. Her father, Paul, passed away in 2018 at age 87. So therefore, neither of her parents ever got closure as to what happened to their daughter. Her remains haven't been found. Her killer hasn't been found. They have no idea what happened to her.
Yeah.
And that's just terrible.
So sad.
And, you know, some people say that time heals wounds, but according to Paul, it only got worse with time. He said, I miss Susie more now. I think the older I get, I miss her.
Poor guy.
And you think about your child or somebody that you love and who lives in your heart and soul. You're never, ever going to stop missing them. No. Not ever. And it's just so tragic that this woman was just working. She was going to a house showing and she was never seen again, despite the fact that she was in the middle of the city in broad daylight.
And one of the biggest cities in the world.
And I looked up this property and it's right off the street. It's not like it was a long walkway to get to the house.
Well, that's why there was plenty of people that saw them.
So many people saw her.
Yeah.
But we never have found her or recovered her remains. And they have tested, I think I read, 800 human remains to see if it was Susie. And not one was a match. So this case still remains unsolved, and this is the sad and tragic disappearance of Susie Lamplaw. And again, she was declared dead, so I guess you could call this the murder of Susie Lamplaw.
Yeah.
So just a sad, sad case. I mean, I have no doubt in my mind that it was likely John Canaan that did this.
Yeah.
I mean, he was released from prison a few days before a woman saw him at the house. He was going to attack her.
You don't think Steve Wright?
I don't know. It possibly, but it's all systems point to
like there's
John.
More connections with Steve. That's the other thing.
Yeah, he personally knew her, but somebody saw John Canaan looking in the realtor's window at Susie at her desk.
And he's raped like 20 women, so
he was known to send roses to people. He was known to be a flashy dresser.
Yeah.
His BMW. Yeah, so many things point to him.
A lot of red flags.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully, you know, this makes people aware, you know, think back to Susie and how she lost her life and, you know, keep herself. She did nothing wrong, obviously. But very, very sad story.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you so much for listening. If you appreciate what we do, you can become an Apple Podcast subscriber or Patreon. There's actually a way to do a free trial. If you're an Apple Podcast person, go ahead and do a free trial for like 3 days. Maybe binge a few episodes. They're free if you do that way. So give it a shot. And I want to say welcome to the Crime and Coffee Couple Club to the latest subscribers.
The latest and the greatest, because we have to have over between 60 and 70 bonus episodes at this point.
Yeah. So,
and they're only growing because we produce 4 a month.
Yep. We want to say welcome to Heather, Haley, Luke, and Ellie. So thank you all so much. And good job by you by filling that error because you saw me looking for my phone.
I did. Look at me. I'm normally not good at that.
She's like a pro now, man. That's fantastic.
You know, I might be wearing pajama pants, but I'm all professional.
Yeah, fantastic.
And I've got our little puppy next to us. We were talking about on YouTube, we should get a camera that we put on her.
Just a puppy cam.
I mean, she is the cutest thing ever. I should pick her up and even show her to the people of YouTube before we end this.
Yeah, real quick. It's like gift.
It's a little gift. You're welcome.
Yeah. She's a Shih Tzu Yorkie mix and she's 4.5 pounds and Allison's everything.
She's my everything.
Yeah. She can, she's our porta pup. We take her everywhere we go. So,
thank you so much. Sorry our dog has distracted us, but she's that cute. She is that cute. And we will be back on Wednesday with a bonus episode and again Sunday for our regular scheduled episode. And until next time,
bye.